Session number 1548.
Ms. Morgan Griffiths, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Park Hall Farm, Wolverhampton. Blakemore, Wolverhampton.
Which year was this?
December 1911.
And what did your father do for a living?
A dairy farmer.
Did you go to school in Wolverhampton?
Yes. Gradually, the secondary school, and then I went to the grammar school there.
How old were you when you left school?
16.
Did you get a job?
No, I worked for my father for a bit on the farm, and then I joined the army.
Why did you decide to join up?
Just one thing which I always wanted to do. I joined the local Queen's Royal Yeomanry, which was one of Queen Victoria's regiments in the Boer War, actually. And did 2 years then as a machine gunner, the biggest machine gun troop. And then I transferred to the Irish Guards in February 1930.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was working for a big dairy contractor, Midland County's dairy actually, been there about 12 months. Then I rejoined the 2nd Battalion Irish Guards at Windsor in September the 1st, so 1st or 2nd anyway. And stayed in Windsor for a few months, and then we went out to Woking Way, St John's, I think it was. Yes, St John's, other golf course there. And then we found ourselves bound for the Hook of Holland to get the Queen Wilhelmina and the Dutch government and their gold back to England before the Germans arrived, which they were on our doorsteps, you see. And it's the first time that, the first time that I ever had seen German paratroops in action. And it's strange that I should finish up in Holland as a British paratrooper at Arnhem, as of all those years, you see. And we came back to England and...
When you went across in this ship,
yes.
What happened when you landed?
We was attacked at the Hook there. We were surrounded by quite a few German troops. We lost one or two men there. And we didn't get very far inland, only about a mile, and we picked up some of the government, Dutch government, and I suppose they're carrying their gold and valuables back, and which we brought back to England in the destroyer, the Wild Swan.
How much fighting were you personally involved in at the Hook?
Well, I was in charge of a machine gun, Vickers machine gun. But only fired a few rounds, that's all, because we withdrew very quickly. We withdrew very quickly because we only had a few hours to spare to get back to the boat again, you see. Destroyer only stayed there a short while to land us and pick us up and bring us out with it, whoever we could bring back with us from the Dutch government.
What was the target that you fired at with the Vickers?
Well, that's just a... There appeared to be a German mortars. There were about two German mortars firing at us. And Vickers did keep them quiet quite a long time. They did cease firing after we fired quite a few bursts at them, you see. And we lost about four or five good NCOs in that little burst because the signals were putting some of their apparatus up. And they got shot down. We withdrew then back towards the coast, and the rest of the battalion followed us out, and we got back on board the Wild Swan and the Valentine, I think it was HMS Valentine, two destroyers.
What kind of terrain were you fighting in? Was it street fighting?
Street fighting, yeah. Well, docks and street fighting.
What kind of streets were they?
Well, I just not say streets. There were roads was leading from the docks onto into inland, about half a mile inland.
Could you tell what kind of German troops you were fighting against?
Well, they appeared to be a mixture. I know there was a lot of parachutists came down, which are, well, we could see them about about a mile away from where we were. Whether they were the troops that fired on us afterwards, I couldn't say.
Did your unit suffer any casualties?
Yes, we lost, I think we lost about, in the group I was in, we lost about five signalers.
Killed?
Yeah. I can't remember anyone being taken prisoner then. Afterwards, of course, when we came to Berlin, that's a different matter.
Which company of the 2nd Battalion were you in?
HQ Company.
And who was in charge of that?
Sergeant Major Shannon, that's right, I think it's Sergeant Major Shannon. Sergeant Major Shannon.
Did he get hurt?
No, he come back all right, yeah. So was the RSM, Hastings. He got back all right.
Did you have any contact with Dutch civilians?
No, not at all. There's no one, there's a few about, but they kept away from us anyway. We hadn't got a great deal of time to spare, you see.
What time of day was it?
The morning.
Was it a frightening experience?
Well, the first fighting I'd been in, so yes, I suppose I wouldn't say it's frightening. It is exciting. I put it that way. Yeah.
Did you see anything of the Dutch royal family?
No. They came in by a van and a car and whisked away straight away to one of the boats. So I don't know whether they were on the boat I came over on or not. I don't know. There was three boats there, three destroyers. We was on the Wild Swan.
And what was the name of the ship you went?
Wild Swan.
Went to the Netherlands in?
What, HMS Wild Swan.
You went there in the
same ship?
Yeah,
and came back on her. Yeah. And strange enough, it's the same boat that took us to Berlin the following week. We came back to England then. We were back about, I think we were back about 8 or 9 days. And we rushed back down to Dover. And we crossed over to Berlin. And then, of course, we had a hectic battle in Berlin. We lost quite a few men.
Can you describe the battle as you experienced it?
Oh yes, it is pretty, pretty sort of noddle to noddle, you might say. I did get a mention on this. I got wrapped up in with a group of young sailors from the boat I was on, and officer, and he asked me if I could use a Bren gun, and I said, well, I hadn't used a Bren gun so far, but I'm sure I can manage a Bren gun, because they're the same as most guns, just pull the trigger and hope for the best. He said, that's all I want. And I got into a big house, which is right on the dock side of the line, overlooking the town, the railway station, and we got fired on from a sniper up from a bedroom window about a couple of 300 yards away, and the officer got wounded in the leg, in the thigh, and we had to withdraw. But I did fire a burst of I think I fired a complete magazine into the window, and we never had any more action from them at all. So apparently they were either wounded or killed, I don't know, but we didn't wait to see any further. And I have to get the officer down to the embarkation point, and that was that. And we tried to get back on the boats again, and we got heavily shelled from the heights of Berlin, where the Germans had advanced into the town. And we pulled out. We pulled out very, very quickly, because we got a shell in the bridge. and the leading seaman brought back the boat, brought back the destroyer to Folkestone.
So it was the Wild Swan that took you and brought you back again?
That's right, yes. Followed by the Whithead and the Valentine. But I think the Valentine got sunk later in the channel. I couldn't be sure about it, but I know she did get sunk. But whether on that occasion, I wouldn't like to say.
Which part of Boulogne were you personally fighting in?
Right on the dock side there, more or less. Just inside the, off the basin there, they call it.
So what had been the objective of taking the Irish Guards there?
Well, it is trying to hold the German advance towards the coast, because they were advancing very fast there, you see. And of course, that is the start of Dunkirk. That is all in the Dunkirk section, you see.
How long do you think you were ashore for?
3 days, actually. That's all. And some of us got scattered. I know a friend of mine, Sergeant Major Miller, who lives in Portsmouth, he came back from Calais.
How did the German opposition in Boulogne compare with the Hook of Holland?
Well, I rather fancy they were on similar lines, but they were very fierce fighting troops, I would say that much. They were first-class troops. There was no sort of home guard type. They really came straight in first on motorcycles and troop carriers and straight into the attack, no messing about.
Did you suffer many casualties there?
Yeah, we lost quite a few, actually. The CO got slightly wounded, Colonel Hayden, but he's walking wounded, fortunately. We did lose quite a few men there, taken prisoner, quite a few taken prisoner, quite a few wounded. Matter of fact, I came across one of them who had been taken prisoner there when I was a prisoner myself after Arnhem, in the same camp at Sagan, in Lower Silesia.
So you didn't get all your wounded back?
No. Got a few back, quite a few wounded on the boat itself, because a shell hit the bridge, you see. And I think it killed the captain. And, well, not killed him, very, he was very badly wounded, and after... Most of the officers were, because a leading seaman brought the boat back to Dover.
Where were you on the Wild Swan when the shell hit?
I was just landing to get onto the deck when the shell hit the bridge. But, I did have a slight wound in the side here.
On the ship?
On the ship, yeah. A sharp bullet. It lodged, actually, in my entrenching tool, fortunately. So I would have been cut in two with it. It's a piece, quite a big piece at the moment.
What time of day did you pull out in?
That was about four or five o'clock in the afternoon.
What other units did you see in Boulogne?
The Welsh Guards came with us. I think that's about all I can remember because, you know, it was so hectic and we were our own group, you see. It's got a bit scattered, but there was a lot of sailors fighting as well. Come ashore with a raiding party.
Did you spend the 3 days more or less in the same spot?
No, we was... When we landed, we got pushed right to the end of the town, right at the back of the town. And then, of course, we got... strangely enough, that was the first time I'd seen a dead fellow. A French soldier lying in the garden of a house there with his leg shot off. And I thought, oh, this really is the real thing, you know. And don't get away from it. And then we got attacked by quite a horde of motorcycle troops and pushed us back down in the town again, in the dock area where the boat was. And that is when we got, I mentioned about the being with a naval officer. That is when I met up with a naval officer who asked me if I could fire a brain gun, and we got pushed back to, right to the embarkation place, and got back on the boat as it had been shelled. And of course the boat pulled out straight away, no messing about. You just said, pull anchor away. And of course left quite a few of us behind.
How much do you think the guards achieved in Boulogne?
Well, we certainly held up their advance by a good 24 hours. And I think you'll find that if you read the history of the Irish Guards about that period, you'll find that that's about what they admit to.
Did you have any contact with French civilians there?
Well, the one house I'd got the brain gun in, the top of the house there, it is a bar down below, and they never stopped drinking. Never helped us, never said anything against us, they just carried on drinking wine or whatever they were drinking. It didn't seem to trouble.
Through the fighting?
No, they just stopped there. And when we came out again, they were still drinking. And of course, I suppose they put their hands up and say, well, hello Jerry, it's all yours, and that's it. Of course, they suffered afterwards, didn't they?
Any other incidents that happened to you in Boulogne?
No, that's just all I can remember.
How did you all feel as you came back to England after all that?
Well, very jubilant, really. Very happy as well, you know. We went back to a place called East Grinstead, where the training battalion was, and went on leave the next day.
Why did you feel so jubilant? Did you not feel that the Germans might be following to Britain?
No, we were glad to get back home again, you know. And then, well, we're on our own ground, you know. Once we're on our own ground now, we can defend this all right. And, of course, the Brigade of Guards at that time, the 20th Brigade, which the Irish Guards, Grenadiers and Welsh belonged to, formed what they call the Brown Line, which was the first line of defence for the Home Guard, right across to Dover, from about Portsmouth right the way through to Dover. I call it the Brown Line. Why Brown Line? I don't know. I was like a man, a general called Brown, I don't know, but just called the Brown Line, and we were more or less on constant watch there until the Dunkirk fellas came back, you know, everybody came back from France, and we were drawn to the Salisbury area.
What did the Brown Line consist of?
All the 20th Guards Brigade and quite a few infantry units, I don't know how many of course, but, and of course the Home Guard, which had just been formed then, gave us quite a lot of help, you know, during the evening for watching. But whether I'm right in saying this, no? I don't know, but whether or not we'd have been a great deal of protection to England, I don't know. We certainly would have fired a few shots at the enemy anyway.
Did you think the Germans would invade?
Oh yeah. We had made up our minds more or less that they would get here.
Did you feel confident about defeating them if they did?
Well, you always feel confident, don't you really? You hope for the best, expect the worst, and hope you win, you know.
Did you stay in the Irish Guards?
Yeah, I stayed with them until 1941, and then I transferred to the number 2 commando, 11th, which was the 11th SAS, became the 1st Parachute Battalion.
Why did you transfer to 2 commando?
Well, I thought, well, you get stuck here now. I got transferred to HQ Company, Transport and Pioneer area. I thought, oh, I want a bit of action in this, you see. So I had one or two of us, other friends of mine as well, we all transferred together. Asked to be transferred and went for an interview at Bulford Camp by an airborne officer, and I think it was 2 months or 3 months training at S.I. Chesterfield, a camp S.I. Chesterfield. I forget the name of the house. It's a big house, it was actually. Big
Hardwick House?
Hardwick Hall, Hardwick Hall, that's right, thank you. Hardwick Hall, which is a very big camp, you see. And they didn't mind guardsmen, and of course they liked guardsmen, because we were hefty fellows, I suppose. But they didn't care much for the guards' discipline as such, because outside the gate as you walked in, into the camp, was a very big sign in dripping red ink, "Bullshit baffles brains." That's the first thing you saw when you came in. And there was none of this spit and polish as such. You were on the move all the time, running. You never walked anywhere. You ran. And you did all that terrific exercises, jumping off high platforms and several things, towers. And after 6 weeks of that, you moved to Ringway, which is now Manchester Airport, of course, where you went through quite a big series of training jumps and balloon jumps. And after you finish all seven jumps, you qualified and come out with a pair of blue wings up front. With extra 4 shillings a day pay, of course, which was everybody really joined for.
Did you agree with the slogan, "Bullshit baffles brains"?
Well, yes and no, because I know you get a lot of these funny jokes, so I painted the coal white and things like that in the guards depot, but the discipline was good for you. That is all it was doing. It made you soldier, didn't it? I didn't mind the discipline at all. I always kept myself very fit, because I was a runner and battalion boxer. I was a battalion boxer. I won the welterweight championship in the depot and the battalion 2 or 3 times as a welterweight. I used to play a rough type of football, you know, rugby.
Did you whitewash the coals?
No, I didn't.
did anybody?
I think someone did say once they had the job of doing it, whether to believe them or not is hard to say.
Why were commandos doing parachute training? Or you think
my late CO took us to Berlin. He became a general, a brigadier of combined operations. And I think number one commander became a sea landing commander. Number two became what they call air landing. And number three and four were also infantry. And then after about 6 or 8 months, they changed number two commander into the 11th SAS. And we remained 11th SAS for about 12 months until they formed the 1st Parachute Brigade. And we took the title of 1st Parachute Battalion. Of course, there never was any 11th SAS after that.
So you had green berets, then red berets?
No, we had we wore all the caps for a long time. Then I bought the red beret out in 41, end of 41. And we've had red berets ever since, of course.
So you never wore the green beret?
No, no.
What did you think of the parachute training that you had?
Quite good. It is fearsome at times. Especially the first two or three jumps you had to make, because we used a very old type of plane called Whitley. And that plane used to carry what I call a belly gunner. It is a hole right in the bottom of the plane, which they used to lower a round turret with a gunner in. Well, they took this out and left the hole there. So you used to sit on the edge of the hole, wait for the light to change from red to green, and just go. One forward and one back, you see. And of course, that is a little terrifying in a way, because you never know if he was going to hit you on the other side of the plane when you went out, because it's quite hard. If you didn't go out straight, you could cause yourself a broken nose or hit yourself backwards. And when you went out, of course, if you went out with your back towards the rear of the plane, if you went up with your back towards the front of the plane, you shot forward, the wind took you forward, and you lie on your back underneath the plane as you were dropping. And you could see the plane going over you like that, which was a little bit of a terrifying experience, but one you got used to, you see. And, but a lot of the fellas thought that the balloon jump was the worst of all. You should do 5 plane drops and 2 balloon jumps, and that got you your wings, you see, and qualified you for your extra pay, etc. And you became a fully qualified parachutist.
Were you apprehensive about the balloon jump?
No, to me, everything. It is a great adventure. Something which I must say this, that I always kept myself remarkably fit, right from the time I was about 12. I used to get up at the farm where we lived at the farm. I used to run a mile every morning, a mile and a mile back every morning before breakfast, even in the winter, every day of the week. And then I used to go in for all the sports, especially running and boxing and everything. So.
What did you think you were preparing for? What operation did you imagine you were preparing for?
Well, when we was doing our jumps and things.
Yes.
Well, we was told that we could be taken anywhere where action would be needed. That was all.
So where did you go to for your first?
We went
operation?
The first lot we did. One battalion did a jump at Brunyville, which of course wasn't the second battalion, so therefore I wasn't on that one. But the next one was North Africa, and we jumped in Tunisia.
How did you get out to North Africa?
By